been shocked in my studies of persuasion and influence over the last 17 years about the shift and the change that what's been working in the past doesn't work right now. The people that we are talking to have changed. Our prospects have changed. So we need to change our persuasion techniques. We all persuade for a living as a parent, as a teacher, as a leader, as a manager. We all persuade, and there's a one-to-one relationship between your ability to persuade and your income. In fact, have you ever talked to a prospect that needed your product, wanted your product, liked your product, could afford your product, everything was perfect, and you never heard from them again? What happened? Or have you gone to, for example, a timeshare presentation where you're going in, not going to buy, not going to buy, not going to buy, and you left buying everything? What happened? What if you could take that power of persuasion and put it into an aerosol can? What would that be worth to you? Can you imagine talking to your prospect? Your prospect's thinking, no, 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 and you went, psh, and they went, okay, I'll take three, and I'll tell all my friends about it. What would that be worth to you? Now, here's the painful question. Over the last 10 years, how much money have you lost with your inability to persuade? How much has it cost you? And for most people, as we administer the persuasion IQ, it's over millions of dollars. Persuasion is the key to your success. Donald Trump says to learn it. Jim Rohn says once he learned how to persuade and communicate, he went from 6 digits to 7 digits. We know it's important. And it really opened my eyes to hear what Napoleon Hill said about persuasion. Now, we all know Napoleon Hill is the author of Think and Grow Rich. He interviewed hundreds of millionaires to find out what they had in common. What were they doing that other people weren't? Now, a lot of those came back to mindset, or what I call self-persuasion. But the reality is, as you study millionaires, what it all comes back is, Napoleon Hill called it the magic ingredient, the ability to persuade, the ability to influence. And that's one reason I founded the Persuasion Institute. I spent $50,000 on a graduate degree thinking it would teach me everything that I needed to know to be successful in life and business. But that's not true. They didn't teach me the basic people skills, the leadership skills, the persuasion skills, the things that are critical to our success. And the study shows, as you look at success, that 15% of your success comes back to your core competence. That's your knowledge of what you do. If you're a dentist, if you're a chiropractor, a real estate agent, a network marketer, an entrepreneur, that's your core competence. That's only 15% of your success. The other 85% comes back to your soft skills, persuasion, people skills, understanding human nature. That's why I found the Persuasion Institute, to understand these basic skills. And another reason is I've always taken persuasion courses, all the sales courses, read all the books and all the studies. And one thing I learned early on is many of the things that they were teaching me were very offensive. Not only to me, but to the people that I would try to persuade, or these little tactics or closing techniques that they taught me, I didn't feel comfortable using them, and they didn't work that often. And to me, as many of you know, a closing technique in my world is like trying to get a kiss after a bad date. There are so many other things that are important to learn in the world of persuasion. And that's what I want to give to you, is the full toolbox of persuasion, to get as many tools as you have. Because as you know, most persuaders use 2 to 3 persuasive techniques over and over and over again. Your top producers use 4 to 6. At the Persuasion Institute, we've identified over 120. And I want to share some of those with you today. Things you can take to the bank, things that'll work right now to help understand what's going on in the mind of your prospect. Because they've changed. First of all, they're more skeptical than ever before. They're coming into the situation not trusting you. You see, 20 years ago it was, I trust you, give me a reason not to. Now it's, I don't trust you, give me a reason to trust you. And the moment they sense you're trying to persuade them to do something, the brick wall of resistance will go up. They will resist you even if they need it, want it, like it, and can afford it. Nobody wants to be persuaded. And so what we're finding and what we need to teach you to do is help people persuade themselves. That's what a great persuader does, is you help people persuade themselves. And a big shift is that introverts now out-persuade extroverts. Extroverts come across as a proverbial salesperson, and people resist that. An introvert listens and asks questions and comes across as a consultant. Get as many tools as possible. As Abraham Maslow said, if the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, you treat everyone like a nail. So let's explore why people resist. Why aren't you able to persuade them? How has persuasion changed? And learn as many things as possible. Because there's many camps out there. There's the Dale Carnegie People Skills Camp. And that's a small piece of the persuasion pie. But if the only thing you have is people skills, is you're making a lot of friends but selling nothing. Or the Closing Skill Camp. Now, closing skills have their place. But the reality is building trust, finding a want and need, opening up the sale is more important than closing the sale. Or people that throw power around, or trust. People that learn personality types, the 32 different personality types and how they apply. Again, these are important, but a small piece of the persuasion pie. Or those that use fear continually. Now, there's a time and place for fear, but you need to know how to use it in the right way. Or NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, an important science, but only, again, a small piece of the persuasion pie. Persuasion fascinates me. That's what we do at the Persuasion Institute, is I look at the studies, we conduct the studies, we talk to the prospect after they've lied to you. Yes, they lie to you just like you lie. When you go to the furniture store and you get that little feeling, they're pushing a little too hard, and you get that feeling in your stomach and you say, I'm just looking, or it's too expensive, or I need to talk to my spouse. So what we do is we talk to the prospect after you've talked to them. Because they do lie to you and they don't tell you the truth. And that's the reality you need to understand about persuasion, is what you think you're doing right or wrong is very different than what your prospect is saying you're doing right or doing wrong. You think you're coming across as confident, your prospect says cocky. You think they trust you, they don't. You thought you were funny, they just felt sorry for you. So you have to understand not what you think, it's what they think. And I want to give you some tools that'll make a huge difference. That's the bottom line, to understand the new world of persuasion and to write down this number is 95% of your persuasion comes back to a subconscious trigger. It feels right. I don't like this person. I like this person. I trust this person. I don't trust this person. It could be a word choice. It could be a gesture. It could be a smell. It could be a color. All these things come into play because you have to be prepared for that knee-jerk reaction. Now, here's a big one. It's too expensive or it costs too much. Now, let's analyze a little bit. 66% of the time, when you hear it's too expensive, they're lying to you, but they know it's a great way to get rid of you. Only 6 to 7% of things we buy are bought on price. Very few things we bought on price. Did you buy the cheapest car? Do you go to a used clothing store to buy your clothes? Do you always eat at the cheap restaurant? Did you buy the cheapest home? No. So you really have to understand exactly what makes them tick. They're more educated than ever before. They're not going to fall for these old-style closing techniques. They'll just say they're going to think about it, and you'll never hear from them again. You have to understand the mindset. You have to understand people don't want to be pushed into a corner. You look at those that are selling cars. Most people never buy the same car from the same person because they were offended, they were manipulated, and they will never go back. And the car dealership doesn't know. That's the persuasion pitfall. When somebody pushes you too hard, you never go back, you never recommend it, and they never know it. That's one thing that puts Saturn cars on the map so fast. Not because of their superior quality, because when people went to buy a Saturn car, they didn't talk to a salesperson, they talked to a consultant. And everybody paid the same price. What a novel idea. They didn't have to be manipulated, they didn't have to be pushed into a corner, and they appreciated that. Understand that we are emotional creatures. When you ask somebody, well, why did you buy that BMW? You'll hear many great things like resale value and safety, but that's not the real reason. You have to understand there is a fine line between the balance of emotion and logic, but understand, most people can't even tell the difference. There's a great study done on the college level where they took college students, they took a class, they split them in half and gave them a very controversial topic. Half the class was supposed to write a logical appeal to persuade people. And the other half was writing an emotional appeal, a persuasive appeal based on emotions about this very controversial topic. They videotaped them and showed them to students across campus. And all the students had to do is identify, is this a logical appeal or is this an emotional appeal? That simple. And what we found out is they couldn't tell. They couldn't tell which one was emotional and which one was logical. So they kept doing more research and this is what they found. If they agreed, it was logical. If they disagreed, it was emotional. It is amazing as I talk to the prospects after you've talked to them and the difference of what you think you did right or wrong and what they say you did right and wrong. And that comes up to the term that's been coined the woebegone effect or self-perception bias. It's very important to dig deep and really open yourself up and not want the sugar-coated version, but to want the truth. What do they really think of you? It is worth millions of dollars to really understand what they think of you. It's amazing as I monitor a persuader and a prospect, and they go through their cycle, and I interview both of them, a series of questions, and I talk to the persuader, and one of the questions is, did they trust you? And the persuader, 9 out of 10 times, says yes. Then I talk to the prospect, did you trust them? And only 1 out of 10 times do they say yes. That is a very large disconnect. How are you coming across? They are judging you in the first 30 seconds. I know you've been taught we're not supposed to judge, but they do. They are deciding in the first 30 seconds pretty much if they're going to do business with you. Are you connecting with them? Now, an interesting fact is this, that if you connect with them and they like you, you have a 90% chance of persuading them. But if they don't like you and you don't connect with them, you only have a 10% chance of persuading them. Those are dramatically different odds. So understand, as we talk to your prospects and we do research out there, amazing things are coming to the surface. Let me just share a few with you. Some are saying that you're getting too friendly too fast. You need to slow it down. Until there's a want or need, until they know that you have something for them, it's not going to matter. Or the old school persuaders who go into an office or to a home and they look around for golf clubs or a fish on the wall or a picture of the family to kind of connect and talk about those things. People are taking those things home. They're tired of talking to them because every person that comes in brings up the same thing, and it comes across as very insincere. That's why I love what I do at the Persuasion Institute. It is so important to understand the mindset of your prospect. That's all we do all day long, is we teach people how to persuade. We monitor the persuasion cycle. What's working? What's not working? And I want to share some of that research with you that'll make a huge difference in your success. As I look at my past, the experience I've had in the business world as general manager, as an entrepreneur, as a sales manager, as a sales representative, as a regional vice president, I study successful people. And I just want to make you aware, one of the things I'm doing research on right now is what I call your persuasion IQ. We've identified 10 traits and characteristics of top persuaders. What do top persuaders do that the average persuader is not doing? Have you ever met someone that didn't seem that sharp but could sell circles around you? They're not working harder. They just have different tools. They have different skills. If I asked you to chop down a tree with a pocket knife, you could probably do it, but that's the wrong tool. And that's true in the persuasion world. How do you get the right tool? It's interesting to note, as I see people in network marketing or chiropractors or entrepreneurs or real estate agents and real estate investors, everyone's excited to pursue their dreams to be an entrepreneur, to become financially independent. And you see someone get into real estate and they try it out. And we know it works because real estate creates millionaires every day. So they try it out and they say, well, it doesn't work. And I have to back up and say, no, that didn't work for you. I can show you countless millionaires in real estate. You didn't have the basic persuasion skills. In business or in real estate or in anything, it doesn't matter if you have the best deal. If they don't like you or trust you, they're going to find somebody else. Or network marketers, they join, they're all excited. Somebody tells them that it's not a good thing, and they hit a brick wall and they quit, and they say, oh, network marketing doesn't work. No, it didn't work for you. Again, I can show you countless millionaires in network marketing, or entrepreneurs, or those who start their own business, same thing. And we see this time and time again, especially with the people that we coach. They are excited. They went to start their own business. Everyone told them they were great at what they do, but when they got out there, they didn't have the basic persuasion or people skills to make it work. And so there's so many great vehicles like entrepreneur or network marketing or real estate or internet. All those are great vehicles. What we do at the Persuasion Institute is provide the gas. Because when people start their own business or they go out into the real world, as they like to call it, they're all excited. For example, if I wanted to start a jet charter company and I got the jets and I got everything lined up and the red carpet, I got a phone call, people were coming. And I put out the red carpet, and I put everything in the plane, and everything was set. And I also made sure I had a fax machine and internet access at my office, and everything was set up. And they got there, and then I think to myself, well, I don't know how to fly this jet. And I say, well, how hard can it be? I can drive a car. There's a manual here. And that's how many people treat their business. They're all excited about the core competence and doing those things, but persuasion is that magic ingredient we want to talk about. That is what's so important. It's the gas to your vehicle of success. So 15% your core competence, the other 85% are some of the things we want to spend time talking about as we go through this process to understand human nature. The more you can understand yourself, the more you can understand people. Why do they get angry? Why do they run away? Why don't they call you back? Why do they lie to you? And that's why we come back to that number, that 95%, that subconscious trigger. We can't identify why we feel uncomfortable. We just feel uncomfortable and we run. We don't want to buy. We don't want to make a decision. Many of your old style persuaders will use those very transparent, very coercive closing skills, and it works sometimes. It works 3% of the time. Even a blind pig can find food, so it worked once, and they keep using it over and over and over again where they follow the old model where you either offend somebody or you sell somebody, and that's not how it works. We need to look at persuasion and how it works. People develop what we call persuasion shortcuts. We don't have time to process all the information. Think about it. If you went to the store to go buy shampoo, you have probably, what, 50 options? Do you have the time to look at the ingredients, the cost per ounce? Oh, this one has mango, and this one has guarana, and this one has manure, or whatever it is. No, you develop shortcuts. Could be color, it could be smell, it could be the cheapest. Some buy the cheapest every time. Some buy the most expensive every time. It could be what your mother bought. It could be a coupon that you have. It could be the other person down the aisle, what they bought. We develop these shortcuts, especially when the decision's not that important, or we're unsure how to act, or is there trust? All these things come into play. And that's why I'm so fascinated with persuasion and influence, is you can develop incredible confidence. You can read people. You can know what they're thinking and feeling. Because you know what the big complaint is? You're talking too much. You're saying too much. You're overselling. You're overpersuading. And that's why what I want to get into is what I call the brick wall of resistance, where they keep resisting you. And what we're finding with persuaders is that you're creating your own brick wall. What you're saying, what you're doing is making that wall thicker and thicker and thicker. Because you have to ask yourself, actually, you should probably ask your prospect, are you a guest? Are you a pest? Or are you a pushover? Are you a guest, someone that they want to talk to, someone that they'll let persuade? Or are you a pest, pushing them? They can't wait to get away. Or are you a pushover, afraid to hurt someone's feelings, making a lot of friends, but making no sales? So what's causing this resistance? Many times you're building it. You're causing it by what you say and what you do. And that's why I want to spend time talking about this brick wall. Because if you lie, you're deceptive, or doing these other things, your prospect would never tell you. You think you're getting away with it, but they feel uncomfortable and they run. Sure, you can fool some people, but most people sense something's wrong and they run away. Well, let me back up. They don't necessarily run away. They'll say things like, send me more information. I need to think about it. I need to talk to my spouse. I'm looking around. I'm not ready to buy now because of something you said or something you did. So let's get into what I call the brick wall of resistance. Analyze these. Take notes. Really ponder and think about, are you doing any of these things and how can we fix it? So get out your pens. Hold on to your seat. Let's talk about some of the things you could and are doing that triggers resistance in your prospect, in your patient, in your client, in your family, in your teenagers. What is it that you're doing that causes people to resist you? Remember, it is human nature to resist those that try to pressure us. That's what amazes me when you look at old-style persuasion. And it amazes me even more that nobody ever teaches you persuasion. We just pick it up along the way. We pick it up from our old boss that says, do it or you're fired, that uses military management. Now, that's not true persuasion. That's coercion, which has short-term compliance but long-term consequences. Anybody can do that. Anybody can force somebody, but I'm talking about true persuasion. One of the reasons most people don't know persuasion is they use force, and they don't know there's so many different options. If Johnny Jr. doesn't eat their vegetables, you try to reward them with some ice cream. If that doesn't work, most people use threats or force. There's a new world out there. So let's talk about that brick wall of resistance that you are building between you and your prospect. One of the reasons they're running away, one of the reasons they're not calling you back, one of the reasons they are lying to you. The first is argue. Now, most persuader says we don't argue, but you're coming across as very argumentative and not even knowing it, that you know what's best for them. No one wants to be told what to do, and when you argue, you might feel good that you won and you know more, but as, what was it, Ben Franklin said, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. If you come across as argumentative, if you argue, if you come across as the superior one that knows everything and you're going to put them in their place, you've lost that prospect, that patient, that client forever. So that's a big one, is argue. Again, open your minds here. Your knee-jerk reaction is going to be, well, I don't do that. And I'm here to say you could be, and you probably are doing a few of these. Don't just ask yourself. Talk to other people that know you that will be honest with you, that will tell you, yes, that is something that you do. Then there's persistence. Now, we have to talk about this. We know that persistence is a key trait of great persuaders, but the question is, are you being persistent or are you being a pain in the butt? Smart persistence is following up 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Sure, that is very important as long as there's still a need and interest to what you're doing. Pain in the butt arises when you keep following up and they've had no interest and you haven't even given them a need or want or reason to purchase your product or service. Another big one is the lack of enthusiasm. You're tired. You've done the same pitch over and over again. But I'm telling you right now, your enthusiasm or your lack of enthusiasm is contagious, period. So if you're going through the motions, they're able to sense it. And when they sense it, they're not inspired. They're not enthusiastic. They absorb your attitudes and your enthusiasms that you have. And that's a big thing we see with top persuaders. And sometimes it's frustrating to talk to top persuaders because they'll say, well, just do that. Get out there. Talk to more people. Say this. Because they don't know sometimes what they are doing right. It's just part of them. They've developed it over the years. That's why it's frustrating for many people. Here, use the script. This is what I use. It works all the time. And the person tries it and falls on their face and fails miserably. Why? Because it could be enthusiasm or even a bigger picture, a lack of passion. Passion, more than anything else, recruits the hearts and minds of the people that you're talking to. Can they sense your passion? When you're talking to somebody, are you singing the words or are you singing the song? Or are you just going through the motions, saying the words, or are you really singing the song? Can they feel your enthusiasm? Can they feel your passion? Another brick in that wall is no follow through. They've asked for something. Will you email this? Will you do this? Will you get me this numbers? Can you fax this to me? People get very frustrated because they don't get it. It's a big complaint against persuaders is no follow through. And when that happens, when you don't do something that you said that you were going to do, when you don't show up for an appointment, that's another brick in the brick wall of resistance. Do what you say. Do what you promise. Be better at taking notes. If you need an assistant, if you need to become more organized, if you need to manage your time better, those are all very important things. But follow through. Come up with a system where you can remember everything that you promised and deliver it. You've heard it before. Under-promise and over-deliver. The complaint against persuaders is the opposite. But focus on that. Follow through. Deliver more than you promise. Another one is one-sided, meaning the only thing you talk about is how great your product or service is. Either you're not willing to talk about the competition or you don't know enough about the competition. Your patient, your prospect, your clients wants to know that you know about everything out there, not just talk about your service or your product. What we're finding is that when you're one-sided and only maybe sharing the positive views, is that they will assign a weakness to you. Let me talk about that. They are looking for a weakness because if they don't find one, two things are going to happen. They're going to say, well, it's too good to be true, and they'll run away, or they will assign a weakness to you. So if your prospect's automatically going to assign a weakness to you, you should probably give them one. Not something major that the product doesn't work or it's going to break, but a minor thing. Don't be one-sided. Don't demean the competition. Be a consultant. Become very knowledgeable. They want to know that they're making the best decision. They want to know that you have the comprehension and the competence to understand their needs and what's out there in the market. Another brick I've mentioned here earlier was being over-friendly, getting too friendly too fast. They don't want to be your friends until they know you have something they need or want. Now, this is a shift in persuasion. It used to be the other way around. The challenge is the persuader thinks they're connecting, they're building friends, but the other person is resisting and resisting and resisting. Even though they're not showing it, even though they're not saying it to your face, that's one of the things that happens. Or another brick is being devious, leaving out information, trying to hide things. They can sense it. They can see right through it. They might always say, oh, they're being devious. They just feel uncomfortable because your microexpressions, which are part of your nonverbal behavior, will show them that you are being devious, that you are hiding something. People can sense it. People can feel it. They're not going to come out and say, you're deceiving me. They will just run. The brick wall will get bigger and thicker. And a big one, too, is the negative attitude. Now, attitude comes from expectations. And when you have a negative attitude, that's also transferred like enthusiasm. Work on your attitude. We're finding with persuasion that good attitudes, optimistic people, outpersuade those that are pessimistic and have bad attitudes. That's just the bottom line. People do not want to spend time with people that are negative and condescending and have bad attitudes and are pessimistic because they don't want to be pulled down. Life's hard enough without talking to someone that's going to pull you down. Or another brick is no diagnosis. What do I mean by that? When you go to a doctor's office and you're sitting there on the parchment paper and the doctor comes in for this time and looks at you and says, flu, or you need penicillin, or this medication, without ever talking to you, without ever asking you any questions, that would offend you. Many times you come in, you need this, this, and this, without ever really exploring their wants and their needs. That puts up a brick wall in the brick wall of resistance. Or pressure. Now, we need to talk about this. People hate to be pressured, but then the reality is you need to have some urgency or scarcity. Now, those are some tools that have been overused. Sale ends today. You must do it today. You have to do it today because of this and this. Most people don't see them as legitimate and not realistic. So when you pressure your prospect, that builds up the resistance. They don't want to be backed into a corner. There are ways around that, but understand when you use that the wrong way, when you develop an urgency or scarcity or pressure the wrong way, they will flee, they will run, they will hide behind the brick wall. Next brick in this brick wall that you're building for yourself and between you and your prospects and between you and a financial fortune is vomiting. Big complaint. You're talking too much. There's probably 12 great reasons to join your company or use your product or your service. They don't care. There's one or two reasons that interest them, and that's all they care about. Can you imagine your son or daughter coming to you, I want to go to the cabin for the weekends with my friends because of this and this. You're like, okay, and this and this and this. Well, I don't know. And this and this and this. And they say, no, you can't go. Because you've given them a reason not to do it. You've confused them in some way. And that's what you're doing. You're vomiting all these features and benefits. People don't care. Because the mindset of your prospect is this. Before they do business with you, they're looking for every reason why they shouldn't. Now, once they've found a good reason to do that, now they're looking for every reason why they should. So what I'm saying by this is find the one or two reasons, seal the deal, get them mentally involved, and tell them the rest later. They don't need to know everything about your product or service or company before they do business with you. When you buy, for example, a laser printer or a photocopy machine, you don't know everything that it does or a piece of software. It probably does 1,000 things you're only interested in two, and the same thing's true for your product or service. Or being condescending. Now, no one thinks they're condescending. It's how they sense. And part of that is understanding that when you talk about a product or service or things that maybe they don't really understand, you have to realize that a confused mind says no. And they're not going to say, I didn't understand that. You're going to say, did you understand that? Or did you see the power in that? Or do you see how that's going to help you? And they're going to say, oh, yeah, they're lying. And when you make them feel stupid or push them into a corner, or you're condescending, that's another brick in the brick wall. Another brick is manipulation. Little things that you do, word choices, the questions that you ask. Again, backing them into a corner makes that brick the manipulation brick. And that causes people to run. They hate to be manipulated. They want to discover for themselves that your product or service is going to help them out. Or another brick is exaggeration. They know when you're lying. They know when you're exaggerating. When you know that you're not telling the truth, they know that you're saying your product or service is going to cure all their woes. It's going to help them become financially independent. But they know when you exaggerate. They're not going to call you on it. It's just going to put a brick wall on that brick wall of resistance. Or here's a big one, desperation. What I mean by that is that you're selling or persuading out of desperation. You have to make it work. You have to make this sale. You're getting more desperate. You haven't made a sale in a long time. They can sense that. They can sense that despair and that need. It's almost like there's blood in the water and they're surrounded by sharks. Here's another brick, being late. Very unprofessional. You're rated as less credible. It's pretty simple to fix. I'm sure you have a good excuse every time why you're late. It doesn't matter to the prospect, patient, client. You can't be late. Be on time. That is a big complaint, and that puts another brick up. Or another brick is prejudging. Now, this is a dangerous one. The moment you say, oh, they're not going to buy, they're not going to do it, I can't persuade them, they're not the right type, it sucks the energy out of you. It sucks the enthusiasm out of you, and you're not going to persuade them anyway. Understand that everybody you meet knows someone who can do business with you or can do business themselves. And I can tell you countless stories of those that prejudge and lost a sale. And somebody else who didn't prejudge went there and it was one of the largest sales that they've ever seen. Time and time again, everyone deserves your full attention. Again, understand this. Everybody you meet knows someone that can do business with you or can do business with you themselves. Give them your full energy and your full heart. Another brick, the fear of rejection. What if they say no? Sure, it's going to hurt a little bit, but understand they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting your product. They probably didn't understand it. Quit taking it so personally. It's amazing as I monitor persuaders how little time they spend persuading. Oh, it's Monday morning and I can't call. They're catching up and it's close to lunchtime. And what if they're at lunch? Oh, it's after lunch. They're probably tired. Well, it's Tuesday. They're usually in meetings. Oh, it's Friday afternoon and they're probably... All these excuses, you need to get out there and talk to people. There'll be some rejection. That's why persuaders are so highly paid, because they can handle the rejection. They've learned to handle it. Some will, some won't. So what? Who's next? You've heard that before. But when they sense that you're afraid to be rejected, you probably will get rejected. That's what you're manifesting. You're scaring yourself. You're scaring them. You need to go out and realize and get past your fear of criticism. Get past what other people are going to think. You wouldn't be so concerned what other people think of you when you realize how little they do anyway. Okay? Get out there. Do it. There will be some rejection, and that's okay. You have to handle it in the right way, and you can't come across that you're going to be afraid of rejection, because that puts another brick in the brick wall. Or another big complaint that puts a brick in that wall is a lack of preparation. You're just going to wing it. You've done it 100 times. As I monitor and study great persuaders, what I'm finding is no matter how many times they've given a presentation, they review it. They study it before they give it again. They do as much research as possible about the person before they get there. Preparation is key. Know your things. You're never over-prepared. Because when you're prepared, it gives you confidence. It gives you energy. It increases your ability to persuade. Another brick? Oh, the excuses. Why this? Why that? Give an excuse. As a persuader, you're not there to give excuses. They don't want to hear excuses. They want you just to make it happen. So don't share your excuses about your life or why you're late or why it didn't work or why it didn't show up. Just fix it and make it happen. They might forgive you the first few times as long as you make it right. Don't make an excuse. You make it right. Another brick is being insincere. They sense that you couldn't give a rip about them, that you do not care about them, that you're just there for their wallet, for their money, for their credit card. They sense the moment that they give you money that they'll never hear from you again. They sense that you're insincere. They sense that you do not really care about them. You just want their wallet. You just want their money. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. It's the perception, not the reality. Because you're thinking, oh, I'm sincere. It doesn't matter what you think. It's what they think. Or another brick are those old school persuasion techniques, the old style things. You know, when telemarketers call in when they say, how are you doing today? Or when you buy a car, all these things that people say that are so old and so offensive, they definitely increase the thickness of your brick wall and adds a brick to that brick wall. Another one, blame. Blaming others, blaming the competition, blaming the economy. Your prospect doesn't want to hear that. We could go on all day on different bricks, but those are some of the ones I want you to think about in your world of persuasion. Why are they resisting you? I don't want you to trigger resistance in your patients, your prospects, and your clients. I want them to feel open, and the reality is they will want to be persuaded by you. That is the key. That's what's so important when you look at the keys of the piano of persuasion. Don't play chopsticks, play Mozart. I said this before, I'm going to say it again. Everything you want in life's on the other side of persuasion. So if you're tired of being broke, you need to take a look at persuasion and self-persuasion and understanding human nature. If you're losing customers and people aren't calling you back and they keep telling you no, or you keep hearing, well, it's too expensive, or I need to think about it. If you keep hearing it's too expensive, you've blown it because you haven't built the value for your product or service. I want to teach you to build such incredible value that when you get to the investment, when you get to the price, they say, that's it. That's an incredible value. With persuasion, you don't have to pay full price. With negotiation, you can make $10,000 in a minute by just saying and doing the right things. It increases your marketing. That's the whole world. The gas to your vehicle to success is persuasion. Don't use any of these bricks in the brick wall of resistance, because you can learn persuasion. Not only will it increase your income, it'll increase your skills, and you can go out and also use persuasion to make the world a better place.